Hello, everyone. Welcome to Powering Up, a cross-generational, cross-cultural conversation about putting our individual and collective power to work during our short time on this amazing planet. I'm Ann Doyle, your host and author of Powering Up, How America's Women Achievers Become Leaders. Today's segment is a little different. Instead of a conversation, it's what I'd call a behind-the-microphone peek at a little bit of what makes me tick. It's a defining moment in the early days of my years as a television journalist when, as one of the very first women sports broadcasters in this country, I helped to open the sports locker rooms to women journalists. And recently I was asked to tell that story on stage in Detroit at the Secret Society of Twisted Storytellers, hosted by Satori Shakur. I hope you enjoy it.
Ladies and gentlemen, please put your hands together and give a big, warm Detroit welcome to Ann Doyle. Hello, everyone. It's Christmas time, 1972. I'm a senior at the University of Michigan, about to get my degree in Spanish and political science. And I go home for the holidays, and my parents, who have six other children, sit me down and say, "Ann, exactly how is it that you're planning to support yourself?" Now, I didn't have a clue. That was not an answer for my parents. So they started right in on me. "Well, what do you like to do? What do you think you're good at?" Now, my father was a television sports broadcaster, and my mother taught university speech and debate. And I had seen Barbara Walters on the Today Show. So I said, "Well, Dad, I'd kind of like to do a job like you. I think I'd like to be a TV, radio, news reporter." "Okay, well, you better get some experience." So I go back to school and I start volunteering at the student radio station. But my big break came when I got an internship at the real radio station over there, WUOM, Michigan Public Radio. So on my very first day there, I'm in the hallway and this middle-aged white guy with a mustache is standing in the doorway of the news department. And he calls me over and he said, "Are you the new intern here?" "Yeah." "Well, I'm the news director. You see this line right here?" "Yeah." "Don't you cross it. Don't you come in here to put something on my desk, to answer the telephone, or to read the news wire. Because there is no place in a news department for a woman." Now, I was embarrassed because other people heard him say that to me. But mostly I was angry because this was my own university and there was nothing I could do about that except prove him wrong. So as soon as I graduated, I started sending out resumes and I sent out at least 100 and I got at least that many rejection letters back. And every now and then I got an interview, including one at WWJ Radio here in Detroit. And the news director said to me, "Young lady, I'm gonna give you some piece of advice. You need to find another career because no one is ever going to listen to a woman doing the news. Your voices are too high." Well, I think after a while, my dad started feeling sorry for me. So my dad calls up a friend of his who's the TV news director at WJIM up in Lansing. And he said, "Tom, would you do a practice interview with my daughter, Annie, and give her a little career advice?" So I go up to Lansing, and I did not come home with a TV news job that day. But I came home with a job because the radio news director, whose name was George Blaha, the voice of the Detroit Pistons, he hired me that day to become the first female radio street reporter in Lansing. So George. And that was really my ticket to a front row seat at all of the incredible things that happened throughout the 1970s in terms of rights and attitudes changing in terms of women. I went from radio news in Lansing to radio news in Detroit to TV news in Grand Rapids to TV news in Los Angeles. I covered all the changes in terms of credit discrimination and rape laws and Title IX, sports, all those opportunities opening up for those little girls who fought for them. And the first women, doctors and judges and police officers and firefighters. And I wasn't just a witness at all that, because I was also right in there as in the fight. I mean, I marched for the Equal Rights Amendment with Gloria Steinem. I heard Shirley Chisholm speak as she was running for president. So by now, it's the end of late 1978, and I'm out in Los Angeles, and I want to come home. I want to come home to Detroit. And so I lined up a bunch of interviews in Detroit, and I came home to stay with my parents for a couple of days, and I ended up in the news department at Channel 2. Now, this is long before Fox. It was before ESPN and CNN. It's CBS Detroit. And I'm sitting in Mike Von Endy's office. And Mike Von Endy says to me, "Ann, I really like your work. You got a great videotape, and I like your resume, but I don't have a news job. I'd like to hire you. How about doing sports?" I was like, sports? Well, I grew up with sports around my dining room table. I was a pre-Title IX tomboy. I like sports. But I'm thinking to myself, oh man, this is gonna be trouble. Because I knew there were very few women covering sports at that time, and certainly not on television. And I also knew that there was a major lawsuit that Sports Illustrated was suing Major League Baseball, and this lawsuit was on its way to the Supreme Court because they wouldn't allow a female reporter into the locker room to cover the World Series in 1977. So I said to him, "Let me think about that." I wanted to talk to my dad, because my dad at that time was rather well known in Detroit in the 70s and the 80s. His name was Vince Doyle, and he was the sports director at WWJ. He's also the president of the Detroit Sports Broadcasters Association. And I did not want to embarrass my father. So I go home, I'm having dinner with them. Of course, my parents are saying, "Well, how'd the job interviews go, Annie?" "Well, Channel 2 offered me a job." "Great." "Yeah, but they want me to do sports." And my dad literally stopped his fork in the air. "Really?" But he didn't hesitate long. He said, "You take that job." And I said, "Yeah, but Dad, if I take this job, I'm going to have to get into this whole big fight about the locker room." And my dad said, "Absolutely. If you don't go in those locker rooms, you're going to have no credibility as a sports reporter." So I took the job, and I kind of girded myself for what was to come. And the very first thing that I did was I went and met with the general managers of all the teams to introduce myself. And those conversations kind of went the way the conversation went with Jim Campbell, who was the general manager of the Detroit Tigers at that point. And Jim was really kind of one of these classic old baseball guys. And he has this great big, beautiful paneled office. And, you know, he's in his leather chair, rocking back and forth. He had a cigar in his mouth. And I'm sure he had one leg up on his desk. And everything's going fine until I said to him, "And of course I'd like credentials to have access to your locker room." Well, Jim stopped rocking right away. He came out of that chair, he came across the desk, pulled that cigar out of his mouth and said to me, "Over my dead body, you're going in our Tiger clubhouse." Well, this whole thing came to a head just a couple of months later, because the courts ruled that the teams could not discriminate on the basis of sex. In other words, if you're letting the men in, then any credentialed female reporters have to go in as well, or everybody stays out. Now you can imagine, this sent shockwaves through all of professional sports. This was a big news story. And I remember that Tiger pitcher Jack Morris told reporters, "The only time I'm talking to a woman when I'm nude is if she's under me or on top of me." So, because I'm already on the job, and there were very few women on the job in sports departments at that point, it fell to me to be one of those women who walked through those doors for the very first time, once the courts said, "You gotta open them up." Now, I learned very quickly that it is one thing for the courts to rule that you have a right to do something. It's another thing entirely to change hearts and minds. And I will never forget being a young female rookie sports reporter standing outside those locker rooms, frozen in place, practically hyperventilating, trying to find the courage to force myself to walk through those doors and face whatever was waiting for me on the other side. And I have never aspired to interview stark naked men, especially athletes who are sitting on a stool, spread eagle. Now, there were plenty of athletes who simply grabbed a towel, but there were others who preferred to make a scene, such as a superstar rookie who strutted his way across the locker room, strolling to the showers, stark naked, with a towel over his shoulder, yelling at the top of his voice, "This is a fucking man's locker room. Get the fucking pussy out of here." Now, but for all of the tests and for all the cold shoulders in press boxes from the male journalists who thought I was wrecking it for them, all that really melts away when I think about the times I had with my dad. Because for the next 5 years, I sat in press boxes side by side with my father, both of us working for different stations, but covering hundreds of Tigers and Lions and Pistons and Red Wings games, and even ringside as Tommy Hearns boxed his way to a world championship. And my dad was the most incredible ally that a young change agent can have, because not all of the tests that I had were with Lions and Tigers. One of the toughest was actually with the Beavers. Now, I'd never heard of the Beavers until Ray Lane, our sports director, came to me and said, "Ann, the Beavers have invited our sports department down to speak to them at the DAC, at the Detroit Athletic Club." The Beavers at the Detroit Athletic Club? You mean that club that won't let any women join, and if a woman goes there, she has to go in the side door? Yeah, that club. Okay, great. So I'm thinking, all right, well, if Ray Lane and Jim Price and Charlie Neal and my sports team colleagues are going, I'm going. So as soon as I get down there, I discover that the Beavers are this private club of businessmen within the DAC. And their tradition is that they meet once a month for lunch, but they meet around the pool. And so they play this wild game of water polo they call basket brawl. And then when they finish, they climb out in their Speedos and they put these yellow bathrobes on, and they sit down at these beautiful tables with tablecloth and china, and they have lunch and they hear a speaker. So Channel 2 sports team comes down there, and I discovered very quickly that the Beavers were going to have me for dessert that day. So the questions start. And somebody asked a question of Charlie Neal about the Pistons. And then someone yells out, "Well, Ann, what do you think about that?" And before I could say one word, 100 men laughed. And then the questions went along, and then somebody asked me about Michigan football, what I thought about how the team did that season. Now, I had covered every single game of the Wolverines that season. I'd traveled with the team. I'd gone to the Rose Bowl with them the year before, covered a lot of their practices. So I answered that, no problem. And someone yelled out, "Oh, your father told you that." And 100 men laughed again. And when all this was going on, I was kind of looking at my teammates there, thinking they might have my back. But they just didn't say one single word. And they really just let the Beavers have their fun with me that day. So fast forward 1 year. Ray Lane comes back to me and he says, "Well, Anna, it's Beaver time again. But I remember how things went last year and you do not have to go with us. That was just terrible." And I said, "No, no, I'm definitely going." But I went and talked to my dad. And I said, "What am I going to do? I have to go." He said, "Oh, yeah, you have to go." And he said, "Annie, I have a plan for you." And so my dad explained the plan. And I said, "Oh, man, I can't do that." And he said, "Annie, you have to trust me. And I promise if you do this, you will win those Beavers over." And I figured, well, it couldn't be any worse than it was last year. And I trusted my father. And so I needed some help on this plan. And I called up Ray Lane and Charlie Neal and told them what I wanted to do. They didn't like this at all. But I finally talked them into it. And so we get down there that day. And right before the program starts, Ray Lane gets up to the mic and he says, "Okay, we're going to start the program in just a minute here. But George wanted to meet Ann and Charlie. They just got here. And so I'm just going to introduce them and then we'll get started." And so he said, "Ann, Charlie," and we walked around to meet George, who is sitting at this table right beside the pool, this elderly man, and you know, he stands up with a big grin on his face, he puts his hand out, and before we could shake it, Ray and Charlie threw me in the pool. Now, pandemonium breaks out. You know, the Beavers are yelling and screaming, and a couple of them are throwing off their bathrobes and jumping in the pool to save me. So I climb out and, you know, dripping wet, soaking wet. It's winter. I have on leather boots. And before I could escape, the Beavers pushed me in two more times. So I finally did get out of there. And, you know, that's kind of where my dad's plan ended. And I'm thinking, what do I do now? And I go off into, there's a little changing room there. And I remember standing there thinking, what do I do? And what I did was I saw a yellow bathrobe hanging there. And I took off all my clothes, except my underwear, and I put on one of those yellow bathrobes. Then I walked back in and faced the Beavers. And I got a standing ovation. And when the Q&A started, not a single man laughed. Now, I've come a long, long way from my days of facing mocking businessmen and hyperventilating in locker rooms. And I know that there are many of you in this room tonight who can match me story for story. But here's what I've learned. I believe that all of us in life have many opportunities that come along to sort of help humanity move forward. And some of the best opportunities to make a difference can be really scary. And when those moments come to me, I remember the very best advice that my father gave all of his seven children. He would always say to us, "You know, the world is a very competitive and can be tough place. And if you're not the best one for the job or the team, or maybe just because you look different, the world will eliminate you from opportunity. But whatever you do, don't ever eliminate yourself." So, when I see athletes taking a knee, young gymnasts confronting a predator, and high school students marching for their lives. I cheer this next generation of social justice warriors, and I will have their back. And just one more thing. If anybody tells you that the beavers didn't throw me in that pool, I have videotape.
Ann Doyle on the front line.
Thanks for listening to Powering Up with Ann Doyle. I hope you enjoyed that a little bit unusual piece today that was a story that I was asked to tell on stage at the Secret Society of Twisted Storytellers. So I hope you'll join us again next week and that you'll subscribe to our podcast. Tell your friends about it. For more on what we're all about, check out our website, AnnDoyleLeadership.com. Of course, we'd love to hear from you. You can tweet me at Ann Doyle LDR, Facebook page Powering Up Women. And our thanks always to producer Robin Kinney and her Motor City Woman Studios here in the creative hotspot of Greater Detroit, where she and we are helping to amplify the voices of women. And women of all generations, I urge you to find your unique powers and then put them to work. And remember to support your sisters. They are your most important allies, your wolf pack. Now let's all go power up.